This is the University of Cambridge Local Examination Syndicate, International General Certificate of Secondary Education, June 1997 examination in English as a second language. Paper 4. Listening comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, candidate number, and center number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the tape to be louder, tell your teacher now. The tape will not be stopped while you are doing the test. The tape should now be stopped and the papers handed out. Now you're all ready. Here is the test. Look at the questions for part one. There are 6 questions in this part of the exam. You will hear each question twice. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. Part 1. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answer should be as brief as possible. You will hear each question twice. Question 1. Julia is in her school library. Why does she want an illustrated reference book?
I've got to give a talk at school on endangered species. As I'll need to make notes for my talk, could you recommend a reference book I could borrow? I'll need a book that also includes large colour pictures and photographs. I want the other students to see what the animals look like. I've got to give a talk at school on endangered species. As I'll need to make notes for my talk, could you recommend a reference book I could borrow? I'll need a book that also includes large colour pictures and photographs. I want the other students to see what the animals look like.
Question 2. You are discussing the new James Bond film with a friend. Why does your friend recommend the film? Give one reason.
You really should see the new James Bond film. The storyline is really exciting, and there are some spectacular stunts. It's just a pity about the music. You really should see the new James Bond film. The storyline is really exciting, and there are some spectacular stunts. It's just a pity about the music.
Question 3. A friend is telling you about a wedding she went to recently. What was wrong with the food?
The food was very disappointing at my sister's wedding. The hotel provided a cooked meal, but the hot food was nearly cold when it arrived, and the portions were much smaller than we expected. The food was very disappointing at my sister's wedding. The hotel provided a cooked meal, but the hot food was nearly cold when it arrived, and the portions were much smaller than we expected.
Question 4. Your father is hoping to watch a football match on television. Why will he not be able to watch all of it?
Oh, no. They've delayed the start of the match by half an hour. I've got to get to work by 10. so I won't be able to watch all of it. Oh, no. They've delayed the start of the match by half an hour. I've got to get to work by 10, so I won't be able to watch all of it.
Question 5. A friend of yours has seen some part-time jobs advertised at a local food factory. What does he advise you to do?
If I were you, I wouldn't bother to write them a letter. I'd go and speak to the manager in person. Lots of students are certain to apply in writing, but he'll be too busy to reply to all of them. If I were you, I wouldn't bother to write them a letter. I'd go and speak to the manager in person. Lots of students are certain to apply in writing, but he'll be too busy to reply to all of them.
Question 6. Mrs. Simpson is phoning the local sports center. What does she want? Why?
My son started swimming lessons at the pool on Thursdays after school 3 weeks ago. I'm afraid he really doesn't enjoy them and is refusing to go anymore. I paid £25 for him to have a course of 12 lessons. Is there any possibility of a refund?
Oh, I'm sorry, that's impossible. However, he can start another course of lessons when he's a little older, without having to pay again.
My son started swimming lessons at the pool on Thursdays after school 3 weeks ago. I'm afraid he really doesn't enjoy them and is refusing to go anymore. I paid £25 for him to have a course of 12 lessons. Is there any possibility of a refund?
Oh, I'm sorry, that's impossible. However, he can start another course of lessons when he's a little older, without having to pay again.
That is the last question in part one. In a moment, you will hear part two. Now look at part two, exercise one. Part 2. Exercise 1. Question 7. Listen to this interview about the Luxor Marathon in Egypt and complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
Well, what a superb marathon has been run here on a sizzling hot day in Luxor. I have with me the 10-kilometre runner, David Moorcroft, here to give you the final details on the largest sporting event ever to be held here in Luxor. Over to you, David.
It certainly has been quite a day here. The Luxor International Marathon is the biggest to be held in this historic city. The event has been organised by Egypt Travel, together with the welcome sponsorship of Egypt's premier airline, Egypt Air.
I understand the sponsors, Egypt Air, are part of the new drive by the Ministry of Tourism to promote sports tourism in Egypt.
Yes, that's right. We are really looking forward to many more sports events like this in Egypt. But let me give you the results of this mammoth marathon. Out of 800, an amazing 800 runners of all ages, we have three main winners. The German runner,
Dietmar Knies, won the 26.6-mile race in a personal best time of 2 hours, 43 minutes and 35 seconds. Oh. Incredible in these hot conditions.
Well, that's good news for the Germans, David.
Mm.
I believe they've had a lot of experience in setting up races like this in Berlin. So it was a challenge for them to do the same thing here in Egypt.
Mm.
Haven't they been instrumental in helping to organise and set up this event in conjunction with the Ministry of Tourism and the Ministry of Sport?
Yes, that's right. And they should be congratulated for doing a wonderful job.
Mm.
And Knies's fellow countrymen took second and third place. Uwe Tsentsch took second place in 2 hours 54.16. Third place went to Stefan Ullmann in 2 hours 59.07. I think Stefan found the heat a little overpowering. 2 hours 59.07 is not his best time.
Mm. I believe the winner, Knies, was quite overwhelmed by the welcome he received.
Mm.
And in particular, he was amazed at the number of children running alongside, wasn't he?
Yes, that's right. He's a physical education teacher, so he was delighted to see so many young people. But he also remarked that he found the sun very hot and draining.
Speaking of children, I believe there was a prize for the youngest runner. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. Young Saeed Ahmed Atta, son of Ahmed Atta and Saba Mahamud Abdul Latif, the Deputy Minister of Youth and Sports.
Ah.
Saeed is only 11 years old and managed to complete the race in just 4 hours, 34 minutes.
Well, that was an achievement for one so young.
Mm.
That must be especially pleasing to the Ministry of Tourism and the Ministry of Youth and Sports, who are so keen to make this type of event a regular feature of life in Egypt.
Absolutely. And as the course of the marathon took runners past such historic sites as the Monument of Colossi, as well as offering them the opportunity to visit other sites of interest, like the Valley of the Kings, we hope, here in Luxor, that this event will be the first of many.
Thank you, David. And good luck with your own race, which I believe begins tomorrow.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Well, what a superb marathon has been run here on a sizzling hot day in Luxor. I have with me the 10-kilometre runner, David Moorcroft, here to give you the final details on the largest sporting event ever to be held here in Luxor. Over to you, David.
It certainly has been quite a day here. The Luxor International Marathon is the biggest to be held in this historic city. The event has been organised by Egypt Travel, together with the welcome sponsorship of Egypt's premier airline, Egypt Air.
I understand these sponsors, Egypt Air, are part of the new drive by the Ministry of Tourism to promote sports tourism in Egypt.
Yes, that's right. We are really looking forward to many more sports events like this in Egypt. But let me give you the results of this mammoth marathon. Out of 800, an amazing 800 runners of all ages, we have three main winners. The German runner, Dietmar Knies, won the 26.6-mile race in a personal best time of 2 hours, 43 minutes and 35 seconds. Oh. Incredible in these hot conditions.
Well, that's good news for the Germans, David.
Mm.
I believe they've had a lot of experience in setting up races like this in Berlin. So it was a challenge for them to do the same thing here in Egypt.
Mm.
Haven't they been instrumental in helping to organise and set up this event in conjunction with the Ministry of Tourism and the Ministry of Sport?
Yes, that's right. And they should be congratulated for doing a wonderful job.
Mm.
And Knies's fellow countrymen took second and third place. Uwe Tsentsch took second place in 2 hours 54.16. Third place went to Stefan Ullmann in 2 hours 59.07. I think Stefan found the heat a little overpowering. 2 hours 59.07 is not his best time.
I believe the winner, Knies, was quite overwhelmed by the welcome he received. And in particular, he was amazed at the number of children running alongside, wasn't he?
Yes, that's right. He's a physical education teacher, so he was delighted to see so many young people. But he also remarked that he found the sun very hot and draining.
Speaking of children, I believe there was a prize for the youngest runner. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. Young Saeed Ahmed Atta, son of Ahmed Atta and Saba Mohammed Abdul Latif, the Deputy Minister of Youth and Sports. Saeed is only 11 years old and managed to complete the race in just 4 hours 34 minutes.
Wow, that was an achievement for one so young. That must be especially pleasing to the Ministry of Tourism and the Ministry of Youth and Sports, who are so keen to make this type of event a regular feature of life in Egypt.
Absolutely. And as the course of the marathon took runners past such historic sites as the Monument of Colossi, as well as offering them the opportunity to visit other sites of interest, like the Valley of the Kings, we hope, here in Luxor, that this event will be the first of many.
Thank you, David. And good luck with your own race, which I believe begins tomorrow.
That is the end of exercise 1. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for exercise 2. Exercise 2. Questions 8 to 15. Springfield High School has recently been inspected. The head teacher of the school is explaining to parents what the inspectors said in their report. Listen to the talk and complete the notes below. You will hear the talk twice.
I have just received the inspector's report of the school, and I am really delighted with the comments we have received. Firstly, I'd like to emphasize that all the remarks on achievement and quality of teaching and learning were excellent. Over 90% of lessons observed were up to standard, and pupils consistently achieved above average examination results. What was most encouraging, however, was the praise we received for the school's success in developing the sense of moral responsibility and self-confidence of the pupils. As you know, here at the school, moral attitudes are valued more than anything else. The inspectors said that they thought the school offered a welcoming environment and a supportive, caring atmosphere. However, one problem picked out by the inspectors was that the school's policy of praising pupils for work sometimes left them uncertain of the standards they were reaching in relation to others. This is a teacher's dilemma. We don't want to discourage the less able pupils who are trying hard. The inspectors congratulated the teachers for their enthusiasm, their willingness to attend meetings, and for the good example they set the pupils. Lessons were generally well planned, and a skillful range of teaching strategies were employed. I'll leave specific comments about individual subjects for you to read in the report. The main shortcomings in the curriculum were that more time needs to be spent on religious education in the top years. It was also noted that the technical equipment in some of the craft and science laboratories badly needs updating. Furthermore, it was felt that the school is under-equipped where computers are concerned. A further criticism related to the lack of a school policy on bullying. However, we plan to redress this by next term. At the moment, there is an informal agreement that bullies are not punished, but are helped to understand why their behaviour is unacceptable. I'm proud that the report was so positive. This has only been achieved by the work of a dedicated staff team who have gone out of their way to promote the development of the whole pupil. Well, I think that sums up most of what I wanted to say. I'd like to stop now and give you the opportunity to ask questions.
Now you will hear the talk again.
I have just received the inspector's report of the school, and I am really delighted with the comments we have received. Firstly, I'd like to emphasize that all the remarks on achievement and quality of teaching and learning were excellent. Over 90% of lessons observed were up to standard, and pupils consistently achieved above-average examination results. What was most encouraging, however, was the praise we received for the school's success in developing the sense of moral responsibility and self-confidence of the pupils. As you know, here at the school, moral attitudes are valued more than anything else. The inspectors said that they thought the school offered a welcoming environment and a supportive, caring atmosphere. However, one problem picked out by the inspectors was that the school's policy of praising pupils for work sometimes left them uncertain of the standards they were reaching in relation to others. This is a teacher's dilemma. We don't want to discourage the less able pupils who are trying hard. The inspectors congratulated the teachers for their enthusiasm, their willingness to attend meetings, and for the good example they set the pupils. Lessons were generally well planned, and a skillful range of teaching strategies were employed. I'll leave specific comments about individual subjects for you to read in the report. The main shortcomings in the curriculum were that more time needs to be spent on religious education in the top years. It was also noted that the technical equipment in some of the craft and science laboratories badly needs updating. Furthermore, it was felt that the school is under-equipped where computers are concerned. A further criticism related to the lack of a school policy on bullying. However, we plan to redress this by next term. At the moment, there is an informal agreement that bullies are not punished, but are helped to understand why their behaviour is unacceptable. I'm proud that the report was so positive. This has only been achieved by the work of a dedicated staff team who have gone out of their way to promote the development of the whole pupil. Well, I think that sums up most of what I wanted to say. I'd like to stop now and give you the opportunity to ask questions. That is the end of part two. There will be a short break before you hear part three.
In a moment, you will hear part three. Now look at the questions for part three, exercise one. Part 3. Exercise 1. Questions 16 to 20. Listen to the following discussion about Christmas and answer the questions in the spaces provided. You will hear the discussion twice.
Geraldine, you're chairperson of the Chamber of British Commerce. What's your view? Is Christmas too commercialised? Do people feel they have to spend a lot of money?
I think we've got a pretty good balance in this country. Obviously, people spend more at Christmas, buying gifts, buying extra food and drink, having parties, and that is all part of the spirit of Christmas. But we have also got to remember shops rely on the extra trade at Christmas.
What do you mean by that, Geraldine?
Well, shops are a lot busier then, and more buying and selling means more jobs being created, not just in high street shops, but in the factories where the goods are made. In the end, everybody benefits from higher levels of employment, not just shopkeepers.
Hmm. Timothy, you're very religious, a practicing Christian. How do you feel about that?
Christmas shouldn't be celebrated in the shops. It's purely a religious festival. I'm not against people having fun, but we need to spare a thought for people in need. The lonely, the hungry, the dying, here and abroad. Caring and compassion is what Christmas is about. In all the buying and spending, we can easily forget the spiritual message of Christmas.
I don't think you're being fair, Timothy. People in this country give a lot to charity, and not just overseas.
Emily, you're a mother and a grandmother. What do you think?
I've got limited means and don't have a lot to spend. I sometimes think TV advertisers are living in another world. They tell us a child's Christmas present only costs £99. Only £99. That's a great deal of money for most people. I feel sorry for parents today, because advertising is fierce and relentless and targeted at children. It's upsetting to parents who can't afford expensive presents. Some even go into debt. I say to people like that, how, when my own children were young, I always explained our financial position, so they knew what was possible. When my son was 10, he wanted a bicycle. I said no, it would cost too much, and he accepted that and settled for a box of colouring pencils.
Surely it's up to the individual. Christmas only becomes too expensive if you let it. People could save up a little each week and buy small gifts.
My small granddaughter baked me some little cakes, and that was a delightful present. The thought and effort involved mean just as much as an expensive present from a shop. One year I gave my son-in-law a second-hand golf club I got for almost nothing. He was thrilled with it. Since then, I've made a habit of looking very carefully for cheap second-hand presents. I repair or clean them. Or I give away good things of my own that I no longer have any need for, but which I know the other person will enjoy.
I've got 24 people presents for a total of £15. That's because I made the presents myself. I've given what I can afford. But when you're in a group of people all unwrapping expensive presents, I can't help comparing my gifts with those of other people, and wondering whether what costs more is regarded more highly.
So, there is some pressure there, then, isn't there? But it's the love, labour, and affection that counts.
Now you will hear the discussion again.
Geraldine, you're chairperson of the Chamber of British Commerce. What's your view? Is Christmas too commercialised? Do people feel they have to spend a lot of money?
I think we've got a pretty good balance in this country. Obviously, people spend more at Christmas, buying gifts, buying extra food and drink, having parties, and that is all part of the spirit of Christmas. But we have also got to remember shops rely on the extra trade at Christmas.
What do you mean by that, Geraldine?
Well, shops are a lot busier then, and more buying and selling means more jobs being created. Not just in high street shops, but in the factories where the goods are made. In the end, everybody benefits from higher levels of employment, not just shopkeepers.
Timothy, you're very religious, a practicing Christian. How do you feel about that?
Christmas shouldn't be celebrated in the shops. It's purely a religious festival. I'm not against people having fun, but we need to spare a thought for people in need. The lonely, the hungry, the dying, here and abroad. Caring and compassion is what Christmas is about. In all the buying and spending, we can easily forget the spiritual message of Christmas.
I don't think you're being fair, Timothy. People in this country give a lot to charity, and not just overseas.
Emily, you're a mother and a grandmother. What do you think?
I've got limited means and don't have a lot to spend. I sometimes think TV advertisers are living in another world. They tell us a child's Christmas present only costs £99. Only £99. That's a great deal of money for most people. I feel sorry for parents today, because advertising is fierce and relentless and targeted at children. It's upsetting to parents who can't afford expensive presents. Some even go into debt. I say to people like that, how, when my own children were young, I always explained our financial position, so they knew what was possible. When my son was 10, he wanted a bicycle. I said no, it would cost too much, and he accepted that and settled for a box of colouring pencils.
Surely it's up to the individual. Christmas only becomes too expensive if you let it. People could save up a little each week and buy small gifts.
My small granddaughter baked me some little cakes, and that was a delightful present. The thought and effort involved mean just as much as an expensive present from a shop. One year I gave my son-in-law a second-hand golf club I got for almost nothing. He was thrilled with it. Since then, I've made a habit of looking very carefully for cheap second-hand presents. I repair or clean them. Or I give away good things of my own that I no longer have any need for, but which I know the other person will enjoy.
I've got 24 people presents for a total of £15. That's because I made the presents myself. I've given what I can afford. But when you're in a group of people all unwrapping expensive presents, I can't help comparing my gifts with those of other people. And wondering whether what costs more is regarded more highly.
So there is some pressure there, then, isn't there? But it's the love, labour and affection that counts.
That is the end of exercise one. In a moment, you will hear exercise two. Now look at the questions for exercise two. Exercise 2. Questions 21 to 26. Listen to this radio interview in which Sally talks about the difficulties of her son who suffers from autism, a condition where people withdraw from reality, and answer the questions in the spaces provided. You will hear the interview twice.
In today's Family Matters, we begin by hearing the story of Sally and her autistic son, Gabriel. Sally, can you begin by explaining what autism is?
Yes, it's really the name given to people who are severely mentally handicapped and whose behaviour could best be described as difficult or challenging. As you can imagine, autistic children can be very difficult to look after and can completely dominate their families.
I'm sure that must be true. I understand that Gabriel has a place at a special college. Tell us how this has come about.
Yes. Well, Gabriel is leaving us soon to go into full-time residential care. He will come back for visits, but the college will be his home. I suppose most colleges require good school examination results to get a place, but Gabriel's qualifications were his, I suppose you'd call it, wild behaviour. He would eat with his hands, or scream constantly, or climb out of windows with no regard for his safety. The college deals exclusively with children and young people with disabilities of this sort. But the fact that he is going to college is really wonderful news. Although as the actual day approaches, I must admit I am a little apprehensive. When we first heard, we all thought it was wonderful news, and I could hardly wait for this moment to arrive. Now, what I fear most is that he might forget all about us. And sometimes I think that it is as if we are abandoning him to strangers. I know perfectly well, of course, that his new carers will give him all the love and encouragement he needs, but I still feel rather uneasy about it.
I can see that. But I imagine that your friends and family have been very supportive over the years.
Oh, indeed they have. It's hard to see how we could have survived without their support. They're always full of good intentions, and often tell us about some new miracle drug that could cure Gabriel. Or they phone with news about a television programme which offers hope of some new development. Or they might come round with news of some success story about parents who devoted their lives to their difficult children and how, after years of faith and devotion, the child can drive a car or completely look after himself. The trouble with all of that was that while I really appreciated the comfort and support, I just became more confused and didn't know whether I should try harder with Gabriel or devote more time to the rest of the family or even to myself. And over time there have been changes in his behaviour. He still can't speak and prefers to sleep on the floor, but he is much stronger now and more assertive. And instead of merely climbing out of a window, he has the agility to get out on the roof and do other horrifying things that, as a boy, he couldn't have done. So I suppose I will have very mixed feelings when he goes off to college next week. But I have to remember that he's lucky to have this opportunity, and that not so long ago, the future for someone like him would have been in a long-term hospital ward with his behaviour controlled by drugs. I'll be the happiest person in the world when he manages to make a cup of tea or get himself dressed. And his only real hope is this college.
Thank you, Sally. It looks like changes all round, both for you and Gabriel. I'm sure all our listeners wish you both the best of luck. Thank you.
Now you will hear the interview again.
In today's Family Matters, we begin by hearing the story of Sally and her autistic son, Gabriel. Sally, can you begin by explaining what autism is?
Yes, it's really the name given to people who are severely mentally handicapped and whose behaviour could best be described as difficult or challenging. As you can imagine, autistic children can be very difficult to look after and can completely dominate their families.
I'm sure that must be true. I understand that Gabriel has a place at a special college. Tell us how this has come about.
Yes. Gabriel is leaving us soon to go into full-time residential care. He will come back for visits, but the college will be his home. I suppose most colleges require good school examination results to get a place, but Gabriel's qualifications were his, I suppose you'd call it, wild behaviour. He would eat with his hands, or scream constantly, or climb out of windows with no regard for his safety. The college deals exclusively with children and young people with disabilities of this sort. But the fact that he is going to college is really wonderful news. Although as the actual day approaches, I must admit I am a little apprehensive. When we first heard, we all thought it was wonderful news, and I could hardly wait for this moment to arrive. Now, what I fear most is that he might forget all about us. And sometimes I think that it is as if we are abandoning him to strangers. I know perfectly well, of course, that his new carers will give him all the love and encouragement he needs, but I still feel rather uneasy about it.
I can see that. But I imagine that your friends and family have been very supportive over the years.
Oh, indeed they have. It's hard to see how we could have survived without their support. They're always full of good intentions, and often tell us about some new miracle drug that could cure Gabriel. Or they phone with news about a television programme which offers hope of some new development. Or they might come round with news of some success story about parents who devoted their lives to their difficult children and how, after years of faith and devotion, the child can drive a car or completely look after himself. The trouble with all of that was that while I really appreciated the comfort and support, I just became more confused and didn't know whether I should try harder with Gabriel or devote more time to the rest of the family or even to myself. And over time, there have been changes in his behaviour. He still can't speak and prefers to sleep on the floor, but he is much stronger now and more assertive. And instead of merely climbing out of a window, he has the agility to get out on the roof and do other horrifying things that, as a boy, he couldn't have done. So I suppose I will have very mixed feelings when he goes off to college next week. But I have to remember that he's lucky to have this opportunity, and that not so long ago, the future for someone like him would have been in a long-term hospital ward with his behaviour controlled by drugs. I'll be the happiest person in the world when he manages to make a cup of tea or get himself dressed. And his only real hope is this college.
Thank you, Sally. It looks like changes all round, both for you and Gabriel. I'm sure all our listeners wish you both the best of luck. Thank you.
That is the end of part three and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will stop the tape and collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, candidate number, and center number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, the tape should now be stopped and all the papers collected. Thank you, everyone.